translation. O king, in the Tamas Manvantara, the sons of Vidriti, who were known as the Vaidritis, also became demigods. Since in course of time the Vedic authority was lost, these demigods, by their own powers, protected the Vedic authority. In the Tamas Manvantara were two kinds of demigods, and one of them was known as the Vaidritis. The duty of the demigods is to protect the authority of the Vedas. The word Devata refers to one who carries the authority of the Vedas, whereas Rakshasas are those who defy the Vedic authority. If the authority of the Vedas is lost, the entire universe becomes chaotic. Therefore, it is the duty of the demigods, as well as kings and aides of governments, to give full protection to the Vedic authority. Otherwise, human society will be in a chaotic condition in which there cannot be peace or prosperity. Omagyanate madandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshuran militam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadha shri vas adi gaura bhaktarinda hare krishna 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 hare hare hari ramo rama ramo hari hari. So Prabhupada says in the purport, it is the duty of demigods and kings to give full protection to Vedic authority. So what that immediately implies is that the kings are following Vedic authority. Otherwise they can't protect what they're not following themselves. So protection in this sense would mean that they're following very nicely and setting an example so that the public can follow in their footsteps. Yad yad acharti shrestas. So Prabhupada says in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in this age, it is very difficult to find such a head of state who is expert in killing the undesirables. Modern heads of state sit very nicely in their palaces and try without reason to kill innocent persons. So this is what we have now. We don't have people leading society following Vedic authority, and because it's at the very best Vaishyas, but generally Shudras that are leading, then there's all chaos in society. And Shudras are cowards. When there's a war, then the Shudras don't go to war. The Shudras hide and let everybody else go instead. So the heads of state are Shudras, maybe good businessmen at best. So when they declare war, everybody else. Whereas in the Vedic system, then the king would head up. And if the king came back, there was recently Prabhupada was talking about one king came back and he asked the queen, he'd gone to war, and he asked his queen to let the drawbridge down so he could go back into the castle. So the queen asked, she sent a messenger out to ask, had he won the battle? And she found out that he hadn't. So then she said the message came back to her husband that my husband would not have come back unless he'd won the battle. So therefore, you cannot be my husband. So she wouldn't let the drawbridge down and allow the husband. So that was the Vedic standard. You go in, there's a war, you declare a war, okay, then you go into the war, you either win or you don't come back. So that's why we have a chaotic society. So Srila Prabhupada makes a nice point also in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, same chapter 21. The divisions of varnas and ashrams will continue to exist either in their original form or in a degraded form. But because they are created by the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they cannot be extinguished. They are like the sun, a creation of God, and therefore will remain either covered by clouds or in a clear sky. The sun will continue to exist. So if they try to make it a class society, like my father is a real socialist. So if my dad was made prime minister tomorrow, so he'd get all the money in. He'd work out how much it was. Okay, we've got £17 trillion here. Work out how many people there were in society. Okay, we've got 55 million people living in Great Britain. That means everybody gets this much of the cake. So everybody gets a slice of the cake. The next day, everyone's got £2.5 million in their lap. and great, everyone's equal now, we've all got the same amount of money. Then you come back in a year, and because 90% of them are Shudras, then all the money goes on intoxication and sex life and arrangements for that, and a small percentage will invest. And then you come back, and everybody else is poor, and there's a few that are rich, and again, you end up with a society where the classes will reassert themselves. So you can't make everybody equal by giving them all the same amount of money. And we had a running battle because my dad's a trade union, you know, and he really has to support the working class. And I said, they're just Shudras, Dad, you know. You never give the working class money. You give them facility, you give them food, give them nice clothes, nice accommodation, but never give them money. And then after, like, you know, his whole life, he did all this. And then at the end, he was like, God, I've just given these guys a £300 pay rise. And I asked them, are you happy? And the guy said, oh, well, once you've bought your wife a couple of dresses and been for a drink, you know, there's nothing left, you know. So no matter what you give them, they'll waste. So it's just a question of how much they're going to waste. You know, they can waste £300 or they can waste £600 because they're Shudras. So they should just be looked after nicely. And the Vaishyas should deal with the money, invest, and then distribute. The Vaishya is like a cloud. He takes all the taxes, all the finances, and then he stores it up. And then later on, he distributes in the form of rains, and everybody gets nice facility. So it's interesting also in the third canto, because sometimes people think, well, we don't want the Vedic, you know, we want to have a nice time, we want to be happy, we don't want the Vedic system where everyone's like, it's really strict and everyone's miserable, and look at the Hare Krishnas, they never look happy, they always look really miserable, you know. They look sad, or, you know, so they maybe have this criticism, so therefore they don't. So Prabhupada makes a point in the third canto that Swayambhuva Manu was a saintly king. Although absorbed in material happiness, he was not dragged to the lowest grade of life, for he always enjoyed his material happiness in a Krishna conscious atmosphere. The case is similar with the conditioned souls in general. They have come into this material life for sense gratification. But if they are able to create a Krishna conscious atmosphere, as depicted here, or as prescribed in revealed scriptures by temple worship and household deity worship, then in spite of their material enjoyment, they can make advancement in pure Krishna consciousness without a doubt. So if people want sense gratification, if they follow the Vedic authority, the Vedas knows best how to eat, the best how to mate, how to sleep, how to defend. The Vedas is the authority on all the different fields. So if you want to gratify your senses, then the Vedas can even show you how to do that. These days, people, what they call enjoyment, we do these concerts from time to time. And there's one that I just don't do anymore now. It's really, really, really gross. And it's called Creamfields. And we knew the organizer, Jane Casey. She used to give us these gold bands so we could go anywhere we want, in anywhere we want. And so I got inside, and I went up to these guys, and I don't know what they were on, but they were really, really, and they were in front of this, don't know if anyone's ever seen what they do with these rays, but they have these really big screens with like psychedelic swells going around, and they have these speakers, and I was wondering where the wind was coming from, you know, and it was the draft, the vibration is so loud, you get this draft coming off the, and it was just going, and these guys were completely bombed out on something, and they were all just in front of this screen, you know, that was like going around, you know, and I kind of popped my head. Hello, I'm a monk from Les Mahigo, and you know, we do lots of nice work. And they were like, which planet am I from? You know, they couldn't understand. They were just so far gone, and their senses were absolutely hammered, you know, hammered to the point where there was no, like, to try and get some gratification. After a while, because sense gratification, after a while, everything becomes numb, you know? So then the only way you can get sense gratification to stimulate the senses is to turn it into pain, to try and get some kind of stimulation. So they got to the point where the sense gratification was that intense. It was like they were in, like, pain, you know? To stand in front of the screen just for a few seconds with the noise, and it was like a torture, you know? So if people don't follow Vedic authority, then the nature of sense gratification, it's like a man that's falling. After a while, he gets used to falling, so he has to speed up the rate at which he's falling to still experience some sensation, to experience some. So sense gratification is like that. After a while, it's, oh, I've done this, I'm going to try and do something a bit more, a bit more, a bit more. And then it gets to the point where it becomes actually a real suffering condition. So the Vedic authority shows us how to use the body nicely, keep the body clean, feed the body nicely. Okay, you want to enjoy yourself. This is the way to do it, in such a way that you don't harm others, you don't harm yourself. And then progressively over a period of time, you can come to the realization that there's more to life than just enjoying, you know, and over a period of time. So it's interesting to know what is going wrong, because today's society isn't following Vedic authority, less and less now. It's interesting in Britain. Britain prided itself a couple of hundred years ago. You know, a lady did not show her ankle in public in the Victorian times. The standard was so high, the morals were so high. Confirmed. And then the pendulum swings the other way. And now Great Britain is the highest for sexually transmitted diseases, underage pregnancies, single-parent mothers, and child abuse. One child in four is abused in the UK in one way or another. So it's swung. It's gone from so moral, and now people want to reject. Oh, don't talk to me about God. Don't talk to me about rules. Don't talk to me about restrictions. I'm just going to enjoy myself and to hell with it. So in America, the biggest cause... Does anyone know what the biggest cause of accidental death in America is, just on this point, just to highlight how society has gone off the rails? The highest suicide. Well, that would be. Accidental, because with suicide you do it, don't you? Generally, you know. Unless you didn't really mean to do it. No accidental. This is for human being, the accidental, the highest cause of accidental death in America. I'll give you a clue. When they lay out the cutlery, because I heard this comment, yeah? And they lay out a long fork along with the cutlery. And they're in the posh restaurants, there's a long fork. And there's a reason why there's a long fork laid out with the cutlery. And that's a hint as to the cause of the... Yeah, people choke on meat. Because what it is, they're so like, you know, oh, so lusty. They don't even chew it. And then they swallow it down to get the next... And then the guy has to open the mouth and put this fork down. That's in the conversation, isn't it, with Srila Prabhupada? They're telling Srila Prabhupada that. Highest cause. So that would be an indication. If you were the king of the country and the statistics came in that year, oh, by the way, king, did you know the highest cause of accidental death this year was choking on meat? Then the king could maybe click, well, I think we're going off the rails here. You know, this is a sign that we really need to get back on track and start reading Srila Prabhupada's books, you know. So another indication of how society has gone off the rails, they did a test. This was in the BTG a few years ago. On people watching television, and they have this apparatus that they put on your temples, and they can tell by what's going on in these blood thingies what the activity is in the brain, you know. So they did a test on people watching television, and it's the same activity as somebody in a coma. So they get back from work, had enough, don't want to hear anything, switch the television on. I just want to go into a coma, you know. So there's no stimulation, there's no interaction. You just sit there and it just washes all over you. And then they get couch fever. And couch fever is when they sit in the same position for more than 24 hours. They have a TV dinner. And then they get blood clots on their lungs and they have to go from the couch to the ambulance, to the hospital. It's called couch fever. Big problem in America because they go into their coma so much that they just, you know, they just can't get out of it, you know. So that would be another sign as well. If you're a Vedic king and you weren't just trying to line your pockets. And this one's a little heavy, actually, but it's interesting. Because I wasn't sure whether the guy was pulling my leg, and then he said something which made me realize he was telling me the truth, you know. But another indication on the point of suicide. I was going around doing some sankirtan, and I was just talking with this guy, and I said, what's your job anyway? And he says, my job's I clean the railway. I have a stretch of railway for about 3 miles, and it backs onto a housing estate, and I'm out there sometimes twice a week because somebody stepped in front of the And he was saying, he said, you know, this is what made me, what clicked, you know, for me, that he was, he said, you know, the funny thing is, he said, you know, when you're, when you're cleaning everything up, everything's ripped to shreds. The guy's shirt, his ties, his hat, everything's just all mangled. He said, but there's one item of clothing which is completely in pristine condition. And that's the guy's shoes. He says, even if he's got really laced up boots on, you know, because the train hits them that hard, just knocks them clean out of his boots. And you find the boots, they're fine, everything else is... So that's like once, twice a week on the back of a housing estate. So that again would be a sign that maybe, you know, whatever system they're using to enjoy themselves is obviously not really working, you know. And to follow like Swayambhuva Manu, and okay, so you want to enjoy, so enjoy like a demigod, observe the rules, show respect to the living entities, observe some kind of authority in your life, and then you can make progress. Then you can actually be happy. So in the seventh canto, it explains that the duty of a leader, it explains to take charge of someone, therefore, either as a father, a mother, a spiritual master, a relative, or a husband, one must accept the responsibility to give his ward freedom from the fearful situation of material existence. So that's the real criterion for somebody running as... Like a little while ago in Italy, they had one of devotee running for... is it Prime Minister? Do they have Prime Ministers in Italy? Yeah, Prime Minister. And his manifesto was, well, you know, I don't have illicit sex, I don't take intoxication, I don't eat meat, I don't gamble, you know, I'm a nice guy, I've got good qualities, and on that basis... So actually, that should be the real criterion. But that's why Srila Prabhupada said he didn't like democracy, because democracy is demon crazy. If 99% of the society is demoniac, then why are they going to vote for somebody that's going to restrain them in these areas, you know? But the person who's in charge, whether he likes it or not, he gets a fifth, is it? A fifth of the karma? Fifth of the karma of the people that he's ruling. So if he wants to take up the post, and he doesn't want to do the job properly, then he's really going to get a reaction for doing that, you know. 10 million people's karma on top of what he's doing as well, you know. It's a lot of karma, isn't it? So that's why it's so important that we distribute Srila Prabhupada's books, because we're in the darkest of ignorance right now. People really do not know. They know there's something wrong, but they're not quite sure what it is. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta calls it a society of dupes. Dupes. Anyone know what a dupe is? When you're duped, when you've been tricked, when you've been cheated, yeah. Bhaktisiddhanta says, these dupes, is it dupes or dupes? Dupes, dupe, dupes. These dupes have their admiring underdupes, but the mutual admiration society of dupes does not escape by the mere weight of their number. The misfortune due to the deliberate pursuit of the wrong course in accordance with the suggestions of our lower selves. Everyone catch that? So it's quite clear, isn't it? It's very, very, as far as Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvataka is concerned, it's very clear. So they're all, it all really, it all comes into the heading of prayas, and prayas is an unnecessary endeavor. Prayas is unnecessary endeavor. If people are advised not to collect too many goods, eat too much, or work unnecessarily to possess artificial amenities, they think they are being advised to return to a primitive way of life. So people sometimes, they have that criticism of, you know, the Hare Krishnas, you know. We don't want to go backwards. We want to make progress. We want to go forwards, you know. So if our endeavor, prayas, is not to inquire about the absolute truth, we will simply increase our endeavor to satisfy our artificial needs. A spiritual aspirant should avoid mundane endeavor. So that's clear. So actually, from a philosophical point of view, the soul is different from matter. Mm. persons just beginning to keep company with devotees may take up spiritual life. Sorry. This material world, oh, this is interesting. This material world, this is from the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This material world exists only as a dream due to our attachment to it. Otherwise, the living soul is always different from the material nature. So that's interesting, that this dream, it appears real because we're attached to it. So the more we become aware that we're not the body, that we're the soul, then the more we become aware that it's a dreaming condition, and that people are just pursuing their different types of dreams. But in due course of time, Srila Prabhupada gave the analogy that it's like children on a beach, and Krishna is like the father watching the children making sandcastles, and he's telling the children, stop playing around, come. And the children say, no, we want to play. And so he says, okay, but he can see what's coming. Eventually the tide is going to come in and smash the castle, and the children are going to start crying, and then they'll come back to Krishna. So Krishna's waiting for the living entity to realize that all his plans will be smashed by the sea of time in due course, and then they come to the realization, every soul will come to the realization in due course that this is a waste of time, it's a useless endeavor, let me go back now to where I belong. So Krishna's waiting patiently for that day. So we do these different dramas to try and highlight points sometimes when we're doing festivals in Scotland. So one drama that kind of illustrates the point, that we haven't done it just yet, but I thought it would be a nice one, is that we have all these people, I don't know how you would do it quite actually, but they're in canoes, and they're all going down the river, and they're going down the river backwards, and at the end of the river is a crashing waterfall. And there's one guy on his canoe, and he's trying to warn the others. He's turned his canoe around, and he's facing the waterfall, and he's seeing it coming. And the other people, some of them are decorating the inside of the canoe. One guy's got the television on, and he's like, and the guy in the canoe is saying, "Hey, there's a waterfall coming in about 3 kilometers. It's massive. There's huge rocks. It's like, you know, hundreds of feet down. It's like Niagara Falls. You know, get ready." And then the people in the canoe are saying, "Will you? Do you mind? You know, you're disturbing. I'm trying to watch the television here. You know, do you think you can, wait till the program's finished at least?" And someone else, "Do you know, I'm trying to decorate this canoe here. Can you leave me too? You know, it's murder trying to get the wallpaper in the side of here, you know." And they're all really absorbed in their situations and trying to enjoy themselves and trying to make it a permanent situation. And it's getting closer and closer. Now, they could argue, well, everyone's going to go over it anyway. You're going to go over it just the same as I am. But if you had a choice, if you're going down a river in a canoe and you had a choice, you could face the waterfall or you could go over it backwards unprepared. Then better to be prepared, better to be grabbing both sides and, "Hare Krishna!" as you go over the edge, you know. So we know death's coming, we're preparing for it. But that doesn't have to be morbid. But it's really morbid if you want to turn your back against it. I mean, that's so morbid. That's like so irresponsible. I'm not gonna pay attention to the situation. I just want to be happy now, and I don't want anything to interfere with that. Then it will just make the experience all the more traumatic when they do go over. The more they neglect now, the more they want to avoid, the more they want to evade the issue, the more anxiety, the more fear, the more pain it will cause when they finally do go over the waterfall. And we think, on that same point, we think we are safe. Prabhupada uses the word orbit. Our friends, relatives, and so-called wives and children are not only fallible, but also bewildered by the outward glamour of material existence. As such, they cannot save us. Still, we think that we are safe within the orbit of family, society, or country. So we think we're within the orbit. Nice expression. Within the orbit, then we're okay, you know. As long as I see my granny and I see my kids, I'm okay, you know. I'll be okay, you know. And so they... So somebody may say, "You know, you're really depressing, you know. Why are you so pessimistic? Can't you say something nice in class and cheer us all up, you know? This is a real... You're being really, really negative here, you know." So Prabhupada says in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that the miseries of birth and death should be discussed unless we have a pessimistic view of this material life. Considering the distresses of birth, death, old age and disease, there is no impetus for our making advancement in spiritual life. So that's it, you know, we don't want to hang around here. When they broke free from Alcatraz, there was one guy, they called him the Birdman of Alcatraz because he used to make bird cages out of matchsticks, and he had loads of, I'm not sure whether it was sparrows or something anyway, or budgies or whatever it was, but he had all these birds. So when they broke, these prisoners got together and they broke out of Alcatraz and they just ran round. They got the keys off the guard and they were just going round. Okay, you're free. You know, so they came to the Alcatraz guy, and he's there with all his budgies and his birds and everything, and his cages made out of matchsticks. And he was like, no, it's okay, I'm fine. You know, I've got my scene here. You know, So sometimes people are like that. We're saying, come on, get out the material world. It's a miserable. No, it's, you know, I'm okay. I've got my colored TV. I've got my plasma screen and my iPad, and I've got the iPhone 5. You know, I'm doing okay, you know. You go ahead and chant Hare Krishna. I'll just stay here and have a good time, you know. Because they've got so attached to being in the prison that even when you open the door, they want to stay. So Prabhupada makes the point. I'll just finish with this last point. He says that this society that we have now, although we think we're making progress, every time we create a facility, then at the same time as create a facility, it causes a problem. And does anyone know the example that Prabhupada gives of how we create a facility and how the facility, it's like one step forward and then two steps back. You create the facility and then it causes even more problem than before the facility. Anyone know? There's an example that Prabhupada uses. Kind of, yeah, breakneck speed. He says, okay, they make the car and then everybody gets killed. There's 50,000 people a year get killed in the UK on the roads. So, and that didn't happen with horse and car. It's hard to get knocked over by a horse and car. You know, you see it coming a mile off. It's only going about, you know, you don't really get caught off guard with a horse and car. It's interesting as well, we talk about advancement, but they say that 200 years ago, the average way to work was by walking, and it took a person an hour to get to work. And then 100 years after that, people were using horse and car. And the average place to work was about 15 miles away, but it still took them an hour to get into work. And now they have a car that goes 70 miles an hour. But they all work about 30 miles away, and it still takes them an hour to get to work. So they're not really getting anywhere, you know. They've got the car, but it still takes an hour to, you know. 200 years ago, I was walking, I got there in an hour anyway. So it's like they can't escape. If that's your karma, if that's what you're due, then that's what you get. No matter how much you try and tweak the material energy, it's still your karma. So, okay, I'll finish there. Does anybody have any questions or comments to make?